It's Carl Valeri with the Stuck Mike Avcast with reporting for Sun and Fun Radio on Clubhouse Drive at the 99's booth right near the flying tent. And today I'm with Barry Vincent Smith with a very special organization during World War II called the WAFS. Now, what were the WAFS again?
WAFS means Women Air Force Service Pilots. We were the first women to fly military aircraft, and we were trained at Avenger Field, Sweetwater, Texas, which was the only flying training school in the world for women military pilots.
Wow, and I do appreciate your service. I'm wondering, what was it like back then to be a woman?
Now, you had to have 35 hours of flying time to be interviewed for the WASP. And I was working at the telephone company then in 1941 and making $25 a week. And my flying lessons were $14.50 an hour dual, so I could afford 1 hour a week. And you had to have 35 hours, so it took me 35 days or 35 weeks to get my 35 hours that we had to have to be interviewed for the WASP.
Well, that takes some dedication. Did the other pilots need to have the 35 hours or just the what?
Not the men, only the women. And they interviewed 25,000 women. Now, they all had 35 hours, and they accepted 1,830, and 1,074 of us got our wings. The rest washed out because they could not fly precision flying.
Wow. Now, that's a very small percentage. You must be very proud of your accomplishment, and we all are, too. But now, where did you go after that, after you went to the training?
After I got my wings, when I got my wings, I said, what rank will I have? Both of my brothers were second lieutenants when they got their rings. You don't get in my family unless you're a pilot. And so, anyway, now, what was the question?
Yeah, after Sweetwater and the training, where would you...
After I got my wings, I said, what rank will I have? I said, both of my brothers became second lieutenants when they got their wings. And the general who was giving us the wings said, pretend you're an officer. He said, nobody knows that you're a civilian flying military aircraft, and don't tell anybody. And we didn't. We had gorgeous uniforms made by Bergdorf Goodman in New York and Santiago Blue.
Now, again, that's a bit of a shock. You weren't part of the military. You were civilians.
No, we were just civilians flying military aircraft.
Now, did you ever get recognition for this? Or
35 years later, they made us veterans. Now,
terrific.
We didn't get one single benefit as all the other women service people got. You know, they got college and houses and everything. We got zero.
Wow.
35 years later, they made us veterans. In March 10th, 2010, they gave us the Congressional Gold Medal for being the first woman to fly military aircraft in this country. And we all went to Washington, to the Capitol, to get that. And there were probably 200 of us that went for that. And remember, there were 25 of us that got our wings.
So when they say you volunteered for this, you truly volunteered and gave up so much.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was making $25 a week at the telephone company, so that was not giving up very much.
No, I guess not. Now, tell us a little bit about the aircraft that you actually were able to fly after training.
When we were in training, we flew Stearman first. That was the open biplane. And we got about 65 hours in that, solo and dual, short and long, cross country, day and night. And then they gave us, everything they gave us was for men because no women had ever been in. So they gave us these men's green coveralls that were huge. But we rolled up the sleeves and tied the belts in and rolled up the pants. And so we wore those every day for 7 months. We flew the Stearman first. We got about 65 hours in that. And then we flew the AT-6, which they have a lot of them here. And we got about 65 hours in the AT-6. And they said, if you can fly an AT-6, you can fly any fighter the Air Force has. And we did fly it.
Wow, that's impressive. Now,
and Then we flew as BT-13s, which the instrument plane.
Okay, and then after the BT-13, and then
wings. And then I went on. I was stationed at Waco, Texas, Blackland Army Air Force Base, and I was a multi-engine test pilot on AT-10s. They were twin-engine advanced trainers for men that were going into the bigger bombers. And all I did, they gave me 3 hours a duel. Well, I should tell you, when I reported for duty at Waco to the number one, there were four hangars and four WASPs there. And I reported for duty the next morning after arriving in Waco. And I said, "Sir, I'm reporting for duty as your new test pilot." And the captain said, "Jesus Christ." And I said, "No, Barry Vinson."
He got confused.
No woman had ever been in that hangar before, and they didn't tell him I was coming. And he was in total shock. But right away, he got a parachute, an AT-10, an instructor, and they gave me 3 hours of duel. And the instructor said, "There, I've taught you all I know about this airplane. You're a test pilot." And I thought, I wonder why it takes the men 5 months to learn to fly this airplane, and I'm a test pilot in 3 hours.
Yeah, why is that?
Yeah, why does that work out? Like, so the next morning I came down to the hangar, and and after he gave me the 3 hours of duel, I went into the hangar, and I met all the mechanics. I talked for 2 or 3 hours to every one of them, found out everything I had to do with every airplane. And the next morning, I came down to the hangar, and there were 8 AT-10s written up on the blackboard that I had to test. And I tested just as everyone, just if I knew what I was doing. And I did.
So you'd do these test flights after they did all the repairs?
Yeah, and the mechanics worked on them, and they repaired them. I took them up and made sure they were safe for the men to fly.
And, of course, they all worked properly, right?
And they were perfect. Every one of them. I never had trouble with one.
Wow.
Except after I'd been there a month, you know, I was there about 2 minutes and they gave me 3 hours of duel. The commanding officer came to me one day and he said, "Would you please teach that other WASP to fly?" She hadn't been flying in that whole month. So I gave her 3 hours of duel, just as they had given me. And when we're coming into land, I was going to let her land a couple times. I couldn't get the gear down. The switch didn't work. So we had to crank it down manually, which wasn't easy. You had to be so strong to do it. But anyway, I could look down in the runway, and the fire engine was gathering, and the ambulance, all the things getting ready for crash landing. So I flew by the tower, and they said, "It looks like the gear is down." So I came and made a perfect landing, and nothing happened. So I taxied it to the hangar, and the mechanics worked on it. I tested it the next day, and it was perfect.
Wow. And did you get a chance also to teach other people how to fly at that point?
No. I did other things. Like, they decided, now I was there, I went there in August of 1944. And so we hoped we would be there till the end of the war. But that was August. November, we had a letter from General Arnold, who was head of all the Air Force, and Jacqueline Cochran, who was our leader. And they said, "We're sorry, but we're going to send you home. We're going to disband you December 20th, 1944, because the men are coming home from their missions, and they want their jobs back. You go home." So we couldn't believe they were sending us home after we had flown every single airplane that the Air Force played. The biggest airplane was a B-29, and that girl right over there has 30 hours in a B-29. You saw it over here.
Yeah, I think it was Fifi up there, wasn't it?
Yeah. And so we couldn't believe it. Actually, we found out the truth later that they were, and they see, they all went before Congress. They get banded together. They found out what was going to happen to them. They were going to be drafted and sent to Germany, the civilian instructors. So they banded together, went to Congress, and said, we should have the jobs that those women are doing, send them home. And they sent us home. So these guys got out of going to Germany.
Wow. I had no idea.
Found that out later. Wow. So they sent us home. And here the war was not over for 9 months. And we had the, and actually we had fewer women killed doing the same jobs as the men.
Say that now. You just said that you had fewer women killed. They were killed.
We had 38 women killed in the 2 years and the 2 months that the WASP were in the Army Air Corps.
Really?
Yes. We had fewer women killed than before the women came in. They were doing the same jobs as we were. Now, I don't know if that means we were better pilots or we were more careful or something, but fewer women were killed than men doing the same jobs.
Sounds like you did a great job. Now, what'd you do after all this? I mean, that seems pretty exciting.
After it, I loved it. When I got out of the WASP, I had over 500 hours. Half of it was multi-engine. But I came home. Nobody would hire a woman pilot. I could have flown any airplane they had with help, you know, for a while, practice.
But that seems so foreign to me. I just maybe.
Delta offered us jobs as flight attendants, and we said we can fly any airplane you have. But nobody would ever hire us, and I don't know, a lot of girls did something with aviation, but I didn't. And anyway, I married a Marine, and he was still in the Marine Corps.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, things have changed a little bit.
Yes, I know that.
Now, how about people these days? I mean, especially women, and we're at the 99s booth, which maybe if you know a little bit about the 99s, you might be able to explain.
In Indianapolis, we lived in Indianapolis. My husband was branch manager of Smith Corona Typewriter Company in Indianapolis. Do you have ever heard of typewriters?
Oh, yeah.
Well, his uncle Bert owned the company, and when Les came home from the Marine Corps, Uncle Bert wanted him to work for his company, so he worked there in Syracuse, New York, at the factory and in the office for 6 years. And then he sent us to Indianapolis, Indiana, and Les was branch manager of Smith Corona Typewriter Company. That was in 52. In 85, he retired because Smith Corona went out of business because they didn't change to computers. Of course, during World War II, they changed to guns and then back to typewriters. See, originally, there were four Smith brothers, and they started the gun company, the L.C. Smith gun, which was a famous gun. But then when typewriters were invented, they switched to typewriters, and then during World War, they switched back to rifles, and then back to typewriters, but they never switched to computers because Uncle Bert died in 52. He would have changed. He was the last of the four brothers to run the company.
Wow. Now, have you done any flying since at all?
I mean, I fly a lot in airplanes because my daughter, after she graduated from Indiana University, she was a Pan Am flight attendant for 20 years. My ticket was $28 around the world, and man, did we go around the world. Oh,
wonderful benefit.
She called me one day, and she said, Mom, I want to go to Mount Everest this weekend. Sure. And off we'd go. Hers was free, and mine was $28.
Boy, you can't beat that.
Boy, and did we go. And I had to go into the flea market. I said, this isn't fair of me to use my husband's money. My first two kids were out of college and gone, and Carolyn was one of them, who was Pan Am. And then, so the last two kids, David and Barbara, were in college. So I was free to go, and I went into the flea market business to earn money to fly all the time with Pan Am.
That's terrific. Now, the girls now that are going into aviation, is there anything you could maybe say to them? I know that you had some challenges then, but how about nowadays? I mean,
You know, I didn't have a car. I didn't have any money. And wherever I went, I had to hitchhike. So I would take the after work at the telephone company on Friday. I got my $25 on Friday. I would take a bus to Amboy Airport, and then it was a 4-mile walk from the bus where the bus let me off out to the airport. So I would start walking. I'd walk until somebody picked me up. And then after I got 8 hours, I soloed, and I thought, I'll go to a little airport in Canastota, New York, which is only 8 miles east of my house, and that way on Saturday I can stand in my house till somebody in front of my house till somebody picks me up. And everybody always said, do you need a ride? And I felt like saying, what in the hell do you think I'm standing here for?
And that sounds like a lot of challenges, getting out of work, getting to the, and just, but nowadays you could just drive to the airport. I think the challenge is all in
a car. Well, I did earlier when I was 19, I bought a 29 Ford in 1939, and I drove that for a year without, and in the winter the snow would fly up through the floorboards, but I'd throw a little rug over it. Never had a flat tire or anything break down. And I thought, I don't like a black car, so I bought a gallon of turquoise paint and a paintbrush, and I painted the whole car turquoise.
What a great story. Hey, now listen, if you talk to girls today and they say, well, women don't fly, or can they fly airplanes, what would you say to them?
They fly all of them. And, oh my gosh, you could go into the Air Force and fly anything. I mean, it would be so wonderful now, and make a career of that. And that's what I plan to do, but nobody would hire me, so I got married. In fact, that is a very strange story right there, but we don't have time for that.
It's amazing, all these stories. And just the thing that I keep hearing in my mind when you're saying these things is that it was such a challenge then for women to do this. Even today there's a challenge, but it's more in our minds than anything else, is that it's out there, the opportunities are there, and people should be receptive to this. We need to make this aviation industry viable,
women,
and there's so many women.
As well as men, any day of the week.
Right, and hopefully we'll see more and more. And by listening to your story, hopefully that'll inspire more to do
it. Anything you have to do to get it. Yeah, and of course, nobody knows, and we were only making $25 a week at the telephone company, so it took almost my whole pay to get 1 hour of flight time, and then I had to pay for lunch, and my carport was $2 a week, my lunch was 50 cents a day, so that I had maybe $1 or $2 left every day, and of course, I had to stand and hitchhike. I didn't have to pull my skirt up or put my thumb up or anything. I just stood there and they stopped. I looked at them and they stopped.
Wow, that's terrific. Now, I see you have this book here. If you could just show it to me here.
My daughter did this on computers. And
now, this book we're looking at, it's this really gorgeous book.
Harris Dean, he was 101st Airborne in Vietnam. He's retired in the villages. Well, actually, he's doing mortgages up there. Barbara is an RN with a BS degree, works for two women cardiologists. That's me. This is my front of my house where I'm looking across the lake. And this is Carolyn, who was a Pan Am flight attendant for 20 years, then got her master's, and she's been teaching school. She married a Marine who was 30 years a Marine helicopter pilot, a colonel. And this is my son, David, who flew for Phantoms 8 years. He's still flying for Delta, and he's single and handsome and dating a flight attendant.
Now, I see this award here that you have.
This is a Congressional Gold Medal. It's about this big around.
In the picture, it's huge.
And this is in Wash. Well, I was standing by that fake one that was up there.
Now, I see a picture next to the Women Air Force Pilots World War II.
Is my son, David. He's got his Delta outfit on there, Carol and Barbara. There's my grandson. He's drummer in New York. My other grandson is flying F-18s out in California. That's my son.
So aviation kind of runs in the family.
Aviation is my family. You don't fly, you don't get in it. Now, here are my two brothers. They were both pilots, flying B-25s, B-17s, B-29s. There's Jeff. He's flying F-18s. There's his dad, 30 years, a military Marine helicopter pilot. Here's his dad as a flying Tiger, his dad. And here's my son flying F-4 Phantoms.
And there's an article that says, like mother, like son. That, where did that come
from? So, and
now, let me ask you this for our listeners, since they can't see this. Can they come by and take a look at this today?
Sure.
Is that?
I'm going to be here.
Are you?
There's
okay, terrific.
My Marine husband. When I came home from the WASP, this is a crazy story, but the day before we were disbanded, December 19th, 1944, it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'd been testing AT-10s all day. The commanding officer came to me, and he said, Barry, I want you to fly this sergeant to Columbus, Ohio, on an emergency leave right now. So I got him a parachute. Now I wonder, how did I know where Columbus, Ohio was or where to stop in between for fuel? But I seem to know everything. I stopped at Memphis, Tennessee Air Base for fuel, got up to Columbus, Ohio the day before we were disbanded. There were about 10 B-17s in a traffic pattern. I worked my way in there, stayed all night. The sergeant went home. I came down to the office the next morning to check if they put fuel on my plane to fly. That was the day I was disbanded, to put fuel on my plane, which they had. And a lieutenant called out, anybody flying to Memphis? And I said, I am. And he said, who's your pilot? And I said, I am the pilot. He said, ooh, I've never ridden with a woman pilot before. And I said, you'll love it. And he did. I took him to Memphis, let him off. And then the mechanic said, you can't take off in this plane. This plane has not had its 100-hour check, and we're not going to let you take off. And I said, I'm disbanded today. I can't fly anymore. I've got to get back to Waco. And so I called my captain. He said, stick with the plane. Bring it home when you can. So I stuck with the plane. 3 days later, December 23rd at 7 in the morning, they were finished. I took off. I landed back down at Waco. My captain said, the one who was so shocked to see a woman pilot, you know, and he said, Barry, I'm going to give you a twin-engine plane to fly it to Syracuse so you'll be home for Christmas. I'll send an instructor with you, and he can fly it back. So I ran to my barracks, threw my stuff in the suitcase, ran back, took off. We landed back at Memphis for fuel, back up to Columbus, Ohio, on our way to Syracuse, got fuel. And then the airport closed because it was so cold and snowing. That was right before Christmas. So I thought, I'll go to the commanding officer and see what he can do about this. So I went to him and I said, I'm trying to get home by Christmas, but I'm weathered in here. What can you do for me? He said, sit in my office. I'll see what I can do. Half an hour later, I'm riding co-pilot in a B-17 to Syracuse with a crew of 5 men. They're taking me home for Christmas.
Wow, that's a great ride home. Gosh, that's a terrific story.
So they let me ride co-pilot in a B-17 to Syracuse Air Base.
I mean, a little bit of airplane noise.
And then I get to Syracuse, thank all the guys for bringing me home for Christmas, and go in the operations office. There's my dad and my stepmother. I said, how'd you know I was coming home? I didn't know it. They said, we didn't know it. Your brother Artie's flying in on a B-25. In about 5 minutes, he's going to marry Doris tomorrow. So that was exciting. I didn't know that. So Artie comes in, and look at that. Is that neat?
Oh, my gosh.
AT-6s. I've got 65 hours in that plane.
They should have you announce it.
I got 65 hours in that. Anyway, so do you want me to rave on? So then we're driving home, and my stepmother says, remember Lester Smith? He's home from the Marine Corps. He's been gone in the Pacific 3.5 years. And I remembered him when we were 20 years old. He came home from school before he went in the Marine Corps at Pearl Harbor time. And we had 4 dates. So when we got home, there he was. My God, I'd forgotten how handsome he was in that Marine uniform. And, oh, I'm so glad to see him for some reason or other. So we sat and we talked, and He said he'd been writing to Betty so-and-so, can't remember her name, for 3.5 years, and he's thinking of becoming engaged to her, and he had a date with her that night at 7, and it was 6:45 then. And so I said, wouldn't that be fun if I went with you tonight? And he said, well, sure, come along. But Betty didn't seem too happy about that for some reason or other.
Well, he was a handsome guy, but boy, I tell you, I'm looking at this book here. You're quite pretty in the uniform on the front cover here.
So anyway, we go out with Betty to and
there's a great picture here.
Here's an AT-10 that I flew, and that's Nancy Shoes Station with me.
And these pictures will be available. You'll have them here all day for people to look at. You'll keep the book with you throughout. Will you be here for most of the show?
We're staying till Thursday.
Till Thursday? Okay. So if they want to come and talk to you, kind of running up on our time here. But is there anything else you want to tell the
fans? I've got a lot to tell you.
No. I'm just going to give one more.
These darn noisy. I can't talk over them. So anyway, the next night is the next night is my brother's wedding, and that Marine was best man, and I was maid of honor. Then a couple days later, they flew back. My brother flew him back in a B-25 to his base in Camp Perry, Williamsburg, Virginia. So I thought, what am I going to do with my life? Here I've got commercial, multi-engine. I've got every rating there is. Nobody would hire me. So I said, I'll stand in front of the house till the Greyhound bus comes along, and I'll hail it and take it bus down to my mother's cattle ranch in Sebring. When I was 19, they bought 2,300 acres, and I lived with them for a year while we were building, cutting down thousands of cypress trees and building the ranch and the horse barn and fencing and buying cattle and all that stuff. So anyway, then my brother already flew him back to his base, and I took the bus to the ranch, and I was at the ranch 2 weeks, and I had a letter from that Marine, that handsome Marine. He said, I've got a 10-day leave. I'm coming to the ranch. And I thought, I wonder if he's bringing Betty. And and so
that was a surprise.
I borrowed my mother's car. Now, there was no electricity at the ranch. From 39 to 47, the ranch. Shut up. The ranch was just on a sand road, and anyway, I borrowed Mom's car, drove into the bus station, picked him up, and we're driving back to the ranch. And right in front of Cleveland's Boney Ranch, he pulled a shoestring out of his pocket, tied to his belt loop, and to that shoestring was a diamond ring for me. And I didn't say what happened to Betty. And, in fact, I don't know. I never asked him.
Wow.
So we were engaged. And then he spent 10 wonderful days with all of us at the ranch. Of course, my mother and everybody at the ranch knew him because he'd moved to Chittenango when he was 14. His dad was our doctor and all that stuff. So I dated him 4 times, remember, when I was 20. So then my brother flew him back to his base in a B-17. He was flying B-17s a mile from the ranch at Hendricksville. So he flew him back to his base. And then I thought, well, I better go home to Chittenango and get a job. And when the war is over, Les will come home and we'll get married. So I wrote to Les, and I said, could you be at the bus station Saturday? My bus stops there for 20 minutes. So he met the bus there, and I was in the number one seat. And I stood up, and he smiled. He didn't say hello. He said, let's get married. And I said, okay. I never had trouble making decisions.
I guess not. And that lasted a while.
Everybody on the bus clapped and cheered, and I got my suitcase, and we went to the William and Mary Presbyterian Church. And we told the minister about it, asked him if he'd marry us. And he said, did you just pick each other up in a bar? We said no, and we told him the story. He said, I'll marry you tonight at 6 o'clock. I said, would you mind finding... Would you... Would you mind calling your parishioners and see if you could get us a room to live in, because we don't have any money? He was a PFC making $52 a month. So he found us a room for $10 a week in a beautiful home. So we got married that night, had our little $10 a week room. The next day, I won't tell you what happened between. Anyway, so I got a job the next day because he only made $52 a month, and there was no opening for a multi-engine test pilot, so they gave me a job as secretary to the post doctor, making $57 a week. So we lived there for several months until, let's see, that was April, we were married April 3rd. In August, they said all the wives have to go home because the Marines are training for the invasion of Japan. So I had to go home. And then, of course, the atom bomb was dropping. My brother was flying B-29s like that one over here. He landed on Tinian Island the day Tibbetts dropped the atom bomb. And then he flew two missions over Japan. The next bomb was dropped, and the war was over, and Les came home. And guess where we went? Down to the ranch for 2 months honeymoon. He told Uncle... I told you, his uncle owned Smith Corona Typewriter Company, so he told Uncle Bert that he wanted to take a 2 months honeymoon. So we borrowed his mother's car, and we each had $50. And he took his rifle. Here's expert shot. And if anything moved, he shot it, and we ate it.
That is a terrific story. That really is.
It goes on and on.
But anyway, just to wrap up here, if people want to hear about all these stories about the war, I mean, I could sit here and talk to you forever about what happened. And for our listeners, they can come here till Thursday and talk to you. And you can be found right here at the 99's tent here. And it's just on Clubhouse Road behind the Flying Magazine. That's a big tent with a big tent says Flying Magazine. And we're going to also talk to somebody else, a friend of yours here, about flying the B-29. So I'm going to go over there and talk to her a little bit. And I thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. Pause here. And now we're still at the booth, the 99's booth. I'm here with Dora. Again, my name is Carl Valeri. And for Sun and Fun Radio. Now, I hear that you... It's a little loud out here, so we'll kind of pause between that, but... I hear that you flew in a B-29 before?
What did you say?
I hear you flew in a B-29?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Who did you fly with?
Colonel Paul Tibbetts.
Paul Tibbetts, the atomic bomb, the person that dropped the atomic bomb?
Wow. Yeah.
That must have been exciting. A little loud. They sure do. I'm sure you've seen a few of these before.
Yeah, yes.
And did you also train in Sweetwater, Texas, too? In the Avenger Field, I should call it, actually. It's that's terrific, and we really appreciate your service. And since the air show is going on, we'll kind of make this a little bit short. But can folks come here and talk to you a little bit during the show at any time, Dora?
Well, I won't be here all.
No? We're just going to be here for the day or tomorrow, possibly? Till Thursday? Okay, great. No, be out and about. Well, if anybody wants to get a hold of you, is your home base? Will be here at the 99's. Yeah. Terrific. But I couldn't imagine what it would be like to fly that B-29. I mean, that's incredible. Was it hard to fly around or?
Oh no, it was very well balanced. It was an easy aircraft to fly.
Now, did you, after the war, did you do any flying, or was that it?
Yes, I was a flight instructor for many years.
Really? Wow. My boss was a flight instructor in World War II, and Maybelle Fletcher, I don't know if you ever heard of her down in Texas, but she had many, many years of flight instructing, and I can imagine you must have been a very good instructor after all that experience with the military. Where did you teach?
In Fort Worth, Texas.
Fort Worth, wow. And did you have a flight school there?
Oh, no. I just was a flight instructor.
And how many years did you teach?
Gosh, it's hard to say. On and off, maybe for 15 years.
Oh, wow. That's cool. That's so neat to be able to pass that on to other people. I think that's terrific. Let me ask you one thing, though, and the important question. And you're here at the 99s booth, and we talked to a lot of women that are looking at flying, and there's not too many women out there as pilots right now, but they're growing. What would you say to some of those girls that are thinking about flying? What would you tell them?
I'd tell them to follow their heart's desire. If they want to fly. They can always find a job someplace.
Amen to that. You know, it's one of the things that people, I still hear it today, and it's foreign to my ears, as some people every so often say that women can't fly. And the WASP, the Women's Auxiliary Service Pilot, they actually prove, yes, women can fly, and they did a great job of it. And I don't see any difference between men and women flying. And the great thing about what you folks have done is you've proven that, and you've far exceeded what I think most folks' expectations were back then.
Yep, the airplane doesn't know the difference.
That's my line. Terrific. Well, thanks so much for taking the time, and hopefully we'll be able to see you again. And if anybody wants to stop by, they can see the 99s tent here on Clubhouse Road, and you can talk to any of these folks. And it's just great to hear some of the history. And we really are proud of you folks and really appreciate your service. So thanks so much. Again, that's Carl Valeri with Sun and Fun Radio.
Thank you.